welcome to Two Modern Mystics with your co-hosts, Dawn Fleming and Linda Robach, who are here to offer you a deeper perspective of what is really going on and how you can disconnect from the chaos and plug into a higher consciousness.
Welcome to Two Modern Mystics. I am Dawn Fleming, and I'm so grateful that we have all these listeners listening in today. Today we have Dr. Susan Trout as our guest speaker, and I guess we're just so blessed to have Susan here for a second show with us. Her topic today is Do You Know Your Group's Destiny? And we will explore how to discover the destiny of your group or your organization. Before we get into our interview, I want to introduce my co-host, Linda Robach. Linda is a wonderful friend of mine. It's great having her as a co-host. She is a Reiki master, a counselor, an alchemist, and she has spent over 25 years helping many people to reach their physical, emotional, and spiritual goals. She is a way shower, and Linda is an amazing light, and it is my honor to do this show with her. Hello, Linda.
Hello, and thank you, Dawn, my amazing friend and fellow light traveler. We have experienced so many blessings together over the years, and I want to acknowledge how much light you emit, not only to those of us who know you and are close to you, but also to the whole world.
So, Dawn,
as you said, we are honored to have Dr. Susan Trout return to our show this season. Well, what is so special about Susan to me is that as she evolves and shares, all of us are lifted to a higher state of awareness and commitment to excellence. I am so excited to hear what she has to say about discovering a group's destiny. 7 years ago, Susan spent 2 days working intensely with our ACT board. ACT stands for A Community of Transformation, and we are a nonprofit educational organization focused on holistic health. Anyway, what a remarkable transformation our board experienced as a result of applying Susan's teachings back then. And the great news is that our organization continues to evolve and expand. So a little bit about Dr. Trout's credentials. She's a co-founder of the Institute for Advancement of Service in Alexandria, Virginia, and she's been serving the Institute for 35 years. Currently, she's director of the Institute's Clarion Way website courses and programs, and she's also board president. She dedicates her efforts to sharing the transformative teachings from her three books that you can find in the Soul and Service Trilogy. They're wonderful resource books. She works with individuals, with national and international leaders, as well as groups and organizations who are searching for concrete ways to usher in the new world. Dr. Trout holds graduate degrees from Stanford and Northwestern University in psychoneurology and communication disorders. She has worked as a specialist and researcher in communication and brain disorders in children and adults in Alaska, Illinois, and California. So prior to her working at the Institute, she served 14 years as professor, chairperson, and researcher at the University of the Pacific and University of California Medical Centers in San Francisco. Let me take a breath. What an awesome background. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak on a topic that is presently on the minds of many. I know for most of my life, both personally and professionally, I've studied, researched, and experienced and written about destiny, whether it is personal destiny or that of groups, organizations, country, or the world. So I'm looking forward to sharing some of what I've discovered today.
And so that brings us to our first question. And I read your wonderful blog article on our individual destiny. So, Susan, tell us, what is destiny?
Well, destiny exists as an unrealized potential within us that really persists in its yearning to be fulfilled. It arises from within as a strong passion to which we just cannot say no to. It's as though our soul taps us on the shoulder and calls us to action by providing a flow of experiences that eventually allow our destiny to emerge and be fulfilled. There are two kinds of destiny. We have a personal destiny and a spiritual destiny. Our personal destiny uses the qualities of our personality and our free will to make choices. So our personal destiny reveals itself through our attitudes and preferences, the activities we choose in our daily life, such as work, friendships, interests, so forth. That is how we personally choose to spend our time and energy. But spiritual destiny is different. It emerges when we turn inward and begin the journey of the spiritual evolution of our soul. And what is important here is that our personal destiny can join with our spiritual destiny when we align our heart with our soul or our higher self. And when this alignment occurs, we experience having one destiny, not two. And actually, we can refer to this alignment as a soul-infused personality. And who has a destiny? Well, there are as many different destinies as there are people on Earth. So that's a lot of different destinies. Every soul has a destiny to discover, whether we're conscious of it or not. But there is one overarching destiny for all humans, and it is this: to remember that the world is sacred and to discover what it means to be a human being. Truly, at the time of our death, we are blessed if we can authentically say, I have lived, I have loved, I have said yes to my destiny.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. I mean, I just took a moment to take it in. I was taking some notes. So could you share a little bit more about why we even talk about destiny and what its gift is to us?
Well, destiny is what brings meaning and purpose to our lives. And without a sense of meaning and purpose for life, we can feel there's no reason for us to even be here on Earth. And this can result in our feeling depressed, angry, confused, anxious, and certainly alone. And we may even sense we're wasting our precious life. So it is our destiny that fulfills our life on Earth. And the gifts of our destiny's fulfillment are what remains for those we leave behind. In other words, by fulfilling our destiny, we leave the world and its inhabitants in a better place than when we arrived at our birth. Perhaps we even plant seeds through our service, writing, and research that will grow and flourish in the future, many years after we're gone. But what about the gifts of our destiny? Well, I always think if we just listen to the eulogies for family and friends, you will discover that you and others are often the recipient of the gifts of their destiny. And the gifts may not just be what the person did that was helpful. It can be what they taught through the troubles of their life. For example, they may have not parented well, or they imposed their will, or they harmed others. Thus, we receive the gift of knowing the importance of forgiveness and compassion, of striving to be a more loving presence in the world. Recently, I attended a memorial celebration of a former colleague, and people were invited to write the gift the person's life had given them in big, colorful letters on a huge piece of paper that they had on the wall. There were nearly 200 words written, some with huge lettering, words like kind, favorite teacher, touch people of all ages, believed in me, a giver, not a taker, stood up for the underdog, inspired me to help others, saved my life. That's just a few of them. And I felt a glow in my heart when I added my own, which was a true example and thus a teacher of selfless service. And even when I was in elementary school, my favorite books were biographies and autobiographies, and they not only provided examples of various ways destinies emerge, but they inspired me to discover my own destiny. And I'd like to mention a recently published book by New York Times columnist David Brooks called The Road to Character, because in his book, he describes how the destinies of some of the world's greatest thinkers, humanitarians, and inspiring leaders emerged over time, how their destinies emerged over time. And their lives were not easy, but they hung in there, so to speak, and eventually fulfilled their destiny.
Wow. What do people tend to misunderstand about destiny? In other words, what do people need to understand about destiny?
That is really an important question. So I have discovered that there are about four things that people tend to misunderstand about destiny, or that people tell me what they think destiny is, and then I can identify what it is they are misunderstanding. So first of all, to understand what destiny is important and not assume that we know. And as I mentioned earlier, there are many different destinies as there are people on Earth. And we do not have to force our destiny to manifest, but we do have to slow down and become aware of the events in our lives that are revealing our emerging destiny to us. And after that, we need to take action. And I want to emphasize that we need not be famous or successful in worldly terms to claim a destiny. This is not about competition or comparing ourselves to others. Destiny is all-inclusive. It includes individuals, leaders, families, groups, organizations, countries, animals, our planet. All have a destiny. And our destiny may be to be a medic, a farmer, a parent, a teacher, a caretaker of animals, a truck driver, an activist, and so forth. Or our destiny may be to be an example of courage, patience, unconditional love, wisdom that perhaps emerged as our destiny during times of illness or tragedy. And what's important is that regardless of the form of our destiny and how others perceive us, eventually recognizing and fulfilling our destiny is essential to our happiness and well-being. Secondly, we need to understand when and how destiny emerges. And would you believe that the seeds of our destiny begin in childhood? In hindsight, we can see that the seeds of our destiny were in how we played as children, in our personality traits, what books we chose to read, what values our parents espoused, what we liked and didn't like, and most of all, what we announced we wanted to be when we grew up. And regardless of our preferences as either children or young adults, we had an irresistible power within us that wanted our life to be uniquely ours. We wanted our destiny to be fulfilled. Let me give you an example. In childhood, Winston Churchill played for hours with his army of toy soldiers. And when he was left alone during long periods of physical and emotional isolation, he persisted in this face of this adversity and developed an inner strength within himself. In adult life, he moved fearlessly through a tumultuous political and military career. His life prepared him for a task which he was destined to do, and that was the defense of Britain during the Second World War. If you don't remember how you were as a child, ask someone who observed you as a young child, like your parents, a relative, or a neighbor. When I asked my parents what I was like as a child, they immediately said I was always organizing the neighborhood children, and I was always acting out. I was a teacher, the business manager, the restaurant owner, and even the funeral director for dead animals and birds. And I have to say that one of the mothers of one of my playmates' mothers came storming down the street one day and said to my mother, she said, "You make Susan stop having funerals." So anyway, but all in my young life, I enjoyed helping out in the community, tutoring. I gave piano lessons on and on and on. And so my parents, from their point of view, that was what I became as an adult, was exactly how I was as a child. So we may not remember, so that's why we may have to check with someone else. Now, destiny also emerges through synchronicity. And synchronicity is a flow of unexpected events and is a vital sign that our destiny is unfolding. Synchronistic events occur at the right time, in the right way, and for the right reason. Mythologist Joseph Campbell calls these synchronistic encounters being helped by invisible hands. For example, a person you happen to meet at a party shares she had to withdraw from college because she had not persisted in her studies. When at that exact time, as you listened to her, you knew you were in danger of the same thing happening to you. And having meeting this person might clear your foggy mind and inspire you to rededicate yourself to your college studies. That's like a synchronistic event. And these examples go on and on, day by day. But what is exceedingly important is that we have to slow down if we wish to notice and benefit from these synchronistic events. And many of us feel overwhelmed by problems and demands coming at us at lightning speed these days. But the more we slow everything down and await synchronistic events to show up and show us the way, the easier it will be for us to notice when steps of our destiny emerge. The third thing to understand about destiny is that we will experience challenges in attracting the right environment to live out our soul's destiny. We have an outline of the story within us, but there are different ways our destiny can be lived out. And because we do not live isolated lives, our destiny's story can be shaped by the choices of others, such as family, friends, colleagues, communities, elections, governments, countries. And in addition, persons in our life can use their free will to make choices that may actually shift or enhance or impede our destiny's journey. And should this occur, we can make choices we had not previously considered on the way to fulfilling our destiny. Again, back to Winston Churchill, he said, "Destiny emerges when we handle one link in its chain at a time. Each link is either an uplifting experience or a challenge to be faced, and regardless of the nature of the link, it has to be handled. Lessons are learned, wisdom is attained, and our destiny is gradually revealed." And fourth, we need to understand that destiny does not take away our free will, nor is the meaning of destiny the same as fate. Fate implies the development of events beyond our control, that these events are predetermined. For me, destiny is much more complicated and incorporates the participation of our free will. So what is free will? Free will is a gift from the divine. It's an aspect of our mind we use to make choices. So we can use our free will to say yes, absolutely yes, absolutely no, well, partly yes, oh, maybe, to our destiny. So choice, an activity of the will, is a vehicle we use to manifest or not manifest our destiny. So we use our free will to decide, yes, I choose to follow my destiny. Yes, I will slow down so I don't miss synchronistic events that reveal the next step of my emerging destiny. And collective free will can involve both destructive and constructive group actions towards humanity, animals, the planet, and cyberspace. And groups can impose their free will onto another group and disrupt its destiny. And if this happens, a person or group's destiny journey will emerge perhaps in a different way, but it will emerge.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So much of what you just said is very up for us right now in this world. But before you speak specifically about the destinies of groups, can you first define for us what a group is? And also explain why many people say that they feel uncomfortable in groups. I know some of people that I know are not comfortable in groups.
Yes, this has to be addressed before we can talk about destiny of a group per se. Well, a group is made up of two or more individuals who come together for a specific purpose in a specific setting. Whether that setting is two people in a relationship, a family, workplace, school, classroom, church, social setting, commuters, the list goes on and on. And often, certain individuals are drawn to a certain group because they have similar destinies and are in similar stages of soul development. And I've written extensively about the soul evolution of groups in all three of my books in the Soul and Service trilogy. For example, a group may come together out of need for personal support, or the group may be work or project oriented, or perhaps another group wishes to engage in activism of some sort. And by the way, most groups in the United States are either engaged in work ethic activities or activism. Another group might want to focus on serving the emotional, physical, mental health of others. Other groups focus on the care of themselves while serving the well-being of others. Another kind of group can serve with a full awareness that there's a force greater than themselves as the doer. And I'd like to add that research has consistently shown that the ideal size for a group to capably work together is 8 people. Why? Because relationships within larger groups are complex, making it challenging for a group to join together and agree to a shared vision, healthy boundaries, and effective communication. And this brings up the subject of why people often say they don't like groups and they feel uncomfortable in groups. And I have had people say to me that they actually hate groups. So why would people say this? And this is important because this has to be addressed if a group wants to fulfill its destiny. Because fulfilling the destiny for a group depends on how comfortable individuals feel when participating in a group. And by comfortable, I mean emotionally safe. And whether or not a person feels emotionally safe in a group can make or break the group's ability to identify and fulfill its destiny. The source of this feeling about being uncomfortable in groups relates directly to experiences of our first group, which is our family of origin. And this is the first setting in which we experience a group and leaders of a group, namely mom and dad and our siblings, or whoever served as our adult parent and family figures. For example, if we felt emotionally unsafe in our family of origin, we are likely to feel emotionally unsafe in subsequent groups, such as classes, meetings, or workplaces. Or if one or both of our parents, as the authority figure, impose their will by being overly strict or even yelling condemning words, we are likely to feel a leader and group members will do the same to us by either judging or rejecting us. Or, if we feel inferior because one of our siblings outshined us, we may tend to experience ourselves as the loser, the inferior one, in other groups. Or, if we were not taught healthy boundaries in our first group, we may not know how to have healthy boundaries in future groups. which can result in feeling rejected and thus unsafe. Or, if our parents did not teach us how to resolve conflicts, we may not know how to handle conflicts in later groups. Significant groups in early life other than the family of origin are our classrooms at school, and this can result in what I call school trauma. For example, if we did not do well in school, we might feel judged and separated from our peers and from our teachers, or we may feel our talents are devalued. We might bring these feelings into future groups, especially into our workplace. And what is important is to acknowledge that in later life, we can project unresolved feelings from our family or school experiences onto group members and leaders who remind us of these individuals. So we might not only feel judged, imposed upon, inferior, or misunderstood, we may compensate for our feelings by becoming extremely competitive, resistant to doing homework, or seeking some way to get the love and attention and respect we so desperately need. And until we recognize and heal these feelings, we will not feel comfortable with groups or leaders. So, an important question to ask ourselves when we are triggered in a group is, what did I get in touch with? Who does this person or this group remind me of? Of course, both leaders and group members need to do their emotional healing and learn to have healthy communication and healthy boundaries with one another, subjects which I want to discuss also. But how does all of this relate to group destiny? Essentially, when we view our past and present group experiences as learning and healing opportunities, it impacts our group's destiny journey in a very positive way. Speaking from my own experience, I used to be scared of speaking in front of a group. Not that I didn't have something to say, but I feared the group members. I feared they would project onto me. And this fear had its roots in my family of origin, of course. For various reasons, I was afraid of being punished by my parents. And I came to understand that when I projected beliefs, qualities, and behaviors onto leaders and group members, I was actually re-experiencing an aspect of my family shadow that it had erupted unexpectedly. I was able to actually heal this fear by, for years, I would identify at least one person in the audience as, quote, my angel. And I knew my angel loved and supported me unconditionally. And every time when I looked out at the audience, I would find a person who just seemed to be beaming at me with this kind of love and support. Well, over time, as this happened time and time again, I came to see that all the group members were my angels, and I no longer have this fear. And if something arises from the groups, I know I can handle it, whatever it is. So to become an authentic, competent, and confident leader, we must first be an authentic, competent, and confident group member. And if this is not in place, we as leaders will feel isolated and fearful in a group, and as a group member, we will feel isolated and fearful of the leader.
Wow. That is really great information. Wow, that's amazing. So now that we understand more about what destiny is and what defines a group, how does it happen that a particular group of people gathers to manifest a certain group destiny?
Well, I love thinking about this, and I'll tell you what, I have an hypothesis. So I'm going to share what I think, what might be happening really from a bigger picture point of view. Let's suppose that there's a group of highly evolved beings who reside on a plane of consciousness that is far more evolved than that on planet Earth. And let's say that this group, which I will refer to as a high council, has a responsibility, namely that of overseeing the well-being and spiritual growth of our planet and identifying what humanity needs next to evolve. In other words, being extremely wise and insightful, this highly evolved group understands what the inhabitants of planet Earth need and what next step would help humanity live life meaningfully, joyfully, and with compassion. However, since the members of the High Council are not in physical bodies, they need to find people living on Earth who can fulfill certain tasks. In other words, to achieve these next steps, the work needs to be done by those in physical bodies living on the planet. So now imagine that the High Council searches for a group who has the potential for accomplishing a particular task. And so they look around and they see that various groups are busy, occupied with other matters, or they're weak on commitment, know-how, and follow-through that would be needed for a particular task. So the leader or group may not be ready to carry out a task that demands a certain kind of knowledge, skill, personality, energy, patience, will, strength. But eventually the High Council finds and selects an appropriate group to accomplish a certain task. It is essential that each and every group member will find their right place in the group by participating in a way that is meaningful and unique to them. So in some way, the High Council conveys, perhaps likely through synchronicity, that this group seems to want to do a certain task that the High Council is looking for. So let's look at the group then. Now, how is this group going to really come together and function? And one of the things is that the group, it has to be something very meaningful for the group, something that they relate to, something that is probably part of their own destiny. And there has to be, if a group gathers to do a certain task, there has to be not a energy leak. So we have to be sure that all members contribute to the task. The leader's emergency destiny needs to be similar to the group members, but the leader will have to be a step ahead of the group in order to lead it to fulfill the vision of completing this particular task. So this happens, and actually this is what I sense happened in our own institute, that we had an assignment that we accepted, and that I had an assignment that I accepted, and people gathered around me who were in alignment and interested in that same destiny, that same task. So the group is gathered and was to have a certain task, a certain destiny, and they really don't know how it's going to be fulfilled. However, what can happen is that because of people's free will, that maybe what they expect when they started, it no longer matches them. So the original gathering of people might not remain as it is. So what is important, that if a person or a group member say, you know, I need to move on, it's important not to make that person wrong or talk them out of their decision. So a leader or group can never say what is right for another group member. The group member has to determine that for him or herself. And this is why, as a leader, I never try to talk a group member into staying with our group. That would be imposing my will and would assume I know what's right for another person. However, group members may not understand this and try to talk that person into staying, or they feel they have failed because the person left. And the opposite is true. The person leaving needs to take care not to make the group wrong. Rather, the group no longer matches their destiny, and the person is ready to take his or her step elsewhere. So this is kind of my theory as to how the group kind of assembles and for a particular task or a particular destiny to fulfill.
You know, I just love visualizing, and I have been, this Council of Higher Consciousness, of higher, and I can actually just get what you were saying. I'm so thrilled to kind of make that connection, because I do believe that's happening in the group that I'm part of right now.
Yes,
so,
and I
go ahead.
I think it's happening more and more throughout the world that people are being assigned certain tasks in order for us to face some of the difficulties we're facing.
So, wow. All of that being said, and I'm just kind of curious to what you would answer to this, how does a group work together so that their destiny emerges and is successfully fulfilled? And with that, are there specific approaches or methods that you would recommend that bring about their success?
Yes, and this is a huge question, so I've selected some of the methods that I think are critical, at least when you get started and if you think of your group as having a destiny. And I've observed that, first of all, I want to say that leaders and groups tend to expect their destiny to be quickly and easily revealed and fulfilled. And because of that, they cannot take the time to educate themselves about how and what they need to learn in order to work together towards fulfilling and achieving their destiny. Destiny does not happen instantly. It emerges step by step over time. Therefore, a wise motto for a group is to remember this. It takes time to save time. It takes time for a group to be born well and to stay well. When we actually take time to be born well and stay well, we save time because it reduces the amount of time and effort needed to come up with ideas and to solve problems and conflicts. And unsolved problems can become embedded and resistant to change. And said in another way, to save time, we will save time if we listen to the whispers before the problems become screams. There are many approaches that support the realization of a group's destiny, and I've written a book about a bunch of them. So first of all, if we acknowledge that we take time, as I've just explained, to being born well and staying well, I have selected what I consider to be the four essential approaches or methods that a group and leader can call upon to strengthen that they will indeed be successful in fulfilling their destiny. And these four approaches or methods are shared vision, holographic system thinking, shared decision making, and group soul lessons. So let's first talk about the approach of shared vision. Individuals have personal visions. Groups have shared visions. And many group leaders and members do not understand how a shared vision evolves and reveals itself over time, thereby revealing the group's destiny one step at a time. So the initial vision of a group is simply where the group starts. A group needs to know where it is in its relationship to attaining its vision and where the group has yet to go. And usually I've observed that as a group comes close to attaining its current shared vision, there's a lag of energy, a loss of focus, a loss of enthusiasm. This all indicates that it's time for the leader and group to review and reset their shared vision. Now, many confuse shared vision and mission. Shared vision is where you as a group want to go. Mission is what you are going to do to get there. So shared vision is best stated in one sentence, beginning with the words to be. For example, the Institute's current shared vision, and we've updated it many, many times throughout our now 36 years, to take the next step of our destiny. And currently, we have, well, within the last year, we have updated it again, so that today it is to be a globally aware service organization that fosters soul development through the study, practice, and teaching of a soul-inspired holographic model of leadership and group life during the Piscean-Aquarian fifth dimensional shift. That's a mouthful. We'll take a while to get to that. to accomplish this, we restated our shared vision, which I just said, and our mission. We restructured our organization. We redesigned our website, and we trained a faculty, and we developed website courses based on the Soul and Service Trilogy, which, by the way, we consider that is our destiny's roadmap, because it's our school of thought, which we call the Clarion Way.
Mm-hmm.
So a shared vision is created when the personal fulfillment of the individual group members is aligned with the greater good of the group. In other words, it's important to ask, what is mine to do, and to match that with what is ours to do. And having a coherent school of thought is the glue that holds any group together. Coherency is a function of the heart of group members. And without a coherent school of thought, a group is apt to flounder and experience confusion among its members. And I realized in the early years of the Institute that I had to write what our philosophy was in order for us to be clear about what it was that we were here to be and do. Now, the second approach that's important to mention, I call holographic systems thinking. And for a group to discover and reach its destiny, members need to develop the ability to understand and apply holographic systems thinking, because this allows the emergence of the group's destiny. Well, what's a hologram? A hologram is a three-dimensional image created by interacting light sources whose individual parts contain the entire image within them, although each from a slightly different perspective. And what is truly powerful is that in a holographic model, the shared vision, mission, and philosophy of the Institute is expressed in all parts of the organization or group, from phone calls, emails, to the cleaning staff, to the individual departments or programs, to the administrative staff, and to the president or CEO. In this way, both the group and well-being of individuals and the group as a whole are supported. Therefore, when a group or organization is holographic, the group's vision, mission, and philosophy exists in each activity of the group, although it is experienced from a different perspective. Now, the key question in a holographic model is for each group member engaged in any activity to always ask this question: who else in the group and/or organization needs to know this in order to carry out his or her responsibilities? The failure of this happening, as many know, is the development of significant conflict within a group or organization. So I cannot stress the importance of this question enough. Who else in the group and or organization needs to know this in order to carry out his or her responsibilities? The third most essential approach is to practice shared decision making. Now, shared decision making is a holographic process, or an organic one, in which a decision emerges from within the group or team when it focuses on three words: what really matters. This approach to any issue allows every perspective to be heard, assuring that the decisions reflect the group's shared vision, mission, and philosophy is a critical part of shared decision-making. Now, shared decision-making is not the same as consensus. When a group uses consensus, some members may not totally agree, but they can live with the opinion that others espouse. But when a group uses shared decision-making, all have to reach the same agreement with a pure heart, no reservations on anyone's part. This is why at the Institute, where we use this method, we sometimes don't initially reach a shared decision, so we have to wait until our next meeting to revise the matter. And invariably, we're able to do this by having this incubation time, so to speak. The other part of shared decision-making is that it is a practice of win-win, not win-lose. And by win-win, I mean that the decision under question must be resolved with an attitude of win-win, especially if the issue seems like it's either-or. Now, when a group focuses on what really matters, a shared decision will emerge. So whenever anything comes up in our laboratory, which I consider the Institute a form of laboratory, and a situation comes up and it looks initially like a win-lose, then we have to talk about it, address what really matters in order to reach a solution or an understanding. So in this method, one person has to guide the process because it has steps to it. And all these steps are in my book, The Clarion Call. I cannot tell you the power of this method because it honors each individual and their voice. And so it is, to me, essential when you're wanting to work through perhaps what the destiny is of your group. And now the fourth essential approach are the soul lessons of groups. And this is important to understand as the group's destiny, a journey evolves. So group life is really a classroom for the soul, I feel, to learn how to be in a group from a place of higher consciousness rather than as an expression of the individual personality. And around here we will say, leave your ego out at the door, so that we can really be together with a higher consciousness and be truthful and genuine. And secondly, group life serves as a classroom of the soul when we embrace the inner knowing of the individual group members through group cooperation and discovery. Because when groups decide to engage wholeheartedly in this process, they are essentially welcoming the emergence of their group destiny. So what are these soul lessons of groups? The first one is shared vision, which I've already explored. The second one is greater good. Now, greater means good for everyone, the entire group, the individual members, and the leader. No lesser or greater good exists for either the individual member, group, or leader. So it is really goodwill, will to good for all. The third lesson is right relations. And the right relations soul lesson includes three values: healthy boundaries, friendship, and integrity. And all three values are spiritual principles that allow the group to really cooperate and grow together. And one of the major ways to support right relations is to regularly use group communication guidelines, because these create emotional safety in the group. The Institute has used guidelines, communication guidelines for groups for its entire now 36 year history. That would be great, 66. Establishing group communication guidelines is the first thing a group should practice when it comes together or should decide upon. So we read communication guidelines at the beginning of every group when it meets. And they really provide respect, a container for respect of one another. The fourth soul lesson is service. Now the soul lesson of service is unique because it integrates the soul lesson of shared vision, greater good, and right relations. It's exceedingly important for a group to define what definition of service they will use. And I've observed that groups devoted to service rarely do this. I once gave a talk on an individual and group's need to define service as shadow and how it evolves developmentally to a large group of service organizations, and how important it is for the group to define and describe it rather than assume everyone knows what service is. And after my talk, a woman approached me, and she obviously was quite shaken, and she said, that she was a leader in one of the most well-known national and international service organizations in Washington, D.C., and she said, "We have never defined service. I understand now why we have certain problems in our organization." The fifth soul lesson is called to stand strong in group consciousness. And that is to, you have to learn the first four lessons first before you can even get to this lesson, to stand strong. To stand strong means to really attain the values of partnership, cooperation, and to stand strong and steadfast in a group regardless of what happens inside and outside the group. So I'd like to just succinctly summarize the subject of group destiny by quoting, I seem to be into Winston Churchill today, but by quote something that he said about destiny that I find very meaningful, and it certainly applies to group destiny. He said, "It is a mistake to look too far ahead. Only one link in the chain of destiny can be handled at a time."
Wow.
Very nice. Very true.
Beautiful. That is true. So, Susan, everything you said was so just lots of food for the thoughts. Food for our thoughts. A lot to reflect on. So you've talked a lot about destiny, and I just want our listeners to know more about what you have coming up and how they can get in touch with you. You've given, and maybe name the names of your books so that they've heard a lot of great things that you've had to say today, that they wanted to buy the trilogy of books, that they would know the names of the books to go by.
Okay. I think our website is really key. To go to our website, and I'll give that address, www.ias-online.org. And there you will see what we are up to, what our thinking is, and what the website courses that we offer. And we now, thanks to a contribution of one of our supporters, we do have some scholarships for our website courses that are now available. That's the first thing. The second thing is to sign up or read my blog, which is www.susantroutsblog.com. I've devoted my blog to topics that are supportive to people at this time on our planet. And some of them are teachings. My last blog was on personal destiny, and now I'm going to also have one on group destiny coming up. And the third one on destiny is going to be the planet and the United States and the planet's destiny. But I have a lot of my blogs are about really strengthening one's own inner life and outer life as well. So you can go to my blog and read past blogs or the current ones. Also, we have a regular e-news that comes out. It doesn't come out regularly. It comes out periodically that gives you an update, and that's helpful. And recently we started putting what we call the Universal Tribute Contemplations on our website. And that, something inspirational to read for the week, that is a part of Born to Serve. The three books of the Soul and Service Trilogy, which you can purchase online at our website, and they're on sale, so we want to encourage people to have them. The three books are Born to Serve, which is the first book, Born to Serve, The Evolution of the Soul Through Service. The second book is The Awakened Leader, Leadership as a Classroom of the Soul. And the third book is The Clarion Call, Leadership and Group Life in the Aquarian Era. And so you always should start with the first book, which is Born to Serve, because it provides the groundwork before going into leadership and groups. But actually now we know that the book is being read in something like 29 different countries, which we're very excited
by.
Mm-hmm.
That is exciting.
Yes, it is. Now, it's not been translated. That people have to understand English, but we do know that 29 countries, people in 29 countries have one or more of the books. So that's kind of, and the right now, since we upgraded our vision, we really are focusing on our website courses as our primary mission right now. So there's lots to look at if you were to go to our website.
Wonderful, wonderful resource and information available. So I hope our listeners take advantage of this. We are so just blessed that you've been able to be here to share with us how we can take this even a step further. But, Dawn, do you have announcements before we close and really officially close?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I have the Creating a Successful Holistic Health Practice workshop the first weekend in May, and that's going to be in Sedona. And you can sign up for that on SedonaWellness.com. And I have an advanced Reiki training class coming up in May as well in Scottsdale, and that's on May 22nd, a Karuna 1 class on June 5th in Scottsdale. And my website is energytransformations.org, and that's transformations with an S. And also I have a newsletter, and it's for free, and it comes out once a quarter. And if you'd like to receive it, it has lots of inspirational and informative articles in there. And you can sign up for it online. And you'll receive a link to download a 10-minute chakra meditation. And I just want to say thank you to Susan, because you just really enlightened all of us once again with such wisdom to reflect on and to take into our lives. And it's just been an honor for me to listen to all that you've had to share.
Well, again, thank you for inviting me. And I do have a couple of sentences as my final last words, if I can share for now.
Please do. Yes.
Okay. I can think of no other topic that is as important in today's world as that of joining together to fulfill our individual and group destinies as a clarion call from the heart. We are all citizens of the earth and thus are blessed with precious lives. Remember, there is one overarching destiny of all humans, and that is to discover what it means to be a human being and to remember that the world is sacred.
Taking a
Beautiful.
Breath and breathing that in. Thank you, Susan, so much for being on our show. And two words come to me right now, and it's grateful heart. So we are full of gratitude to you for the wisdom and direction that you're providing to individuals and to groups who are searching for guidance to usher in and maintain the new earth. So we hope you come back next year and share where you are again. And I'd like to close with words from a Sanskrit mantra. May all beings everywhere be happy and free. And may the thoughts, words, and actions of my own life contribute in some way to that happiness and to that freedom for all. Namaste.
Namaste.